Welcome to the Agile Revolution. I'm Renee, and on this very special podcast, I'm sitting in Sydney in a very sparse mezzanine area, and I have with me two special guests from the organisation called Flux. First guest is Max Kay. Welcome.
Welcome. Oh, that was... Thank you, is what I meant to say.
Welcome.
We've just come out of some pretty heavy calls, so...
And my second guest is Nathan Spataro. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us, Renee.
So for those who are listening and haven't heard about Flux, gentlemen, what is Flux?
So Flux is an idea to redesign the way that we think of democracy and the way we conduct democracy. It's a platform that's going to allow voters, participants in the system, and Australian citizens, to engage directly with democracy in a way that we've never been able to do before. Right now we elect officials, those officials go to Canberra, and they make decisions on our behalf. Flux is a way for participants and citizens to directly vote on bills and legislation that they care about.
So it's an IT solution?
Well, it's a lot of things. There's a political party in order to facilitate getting into Parliament. There's a technological platform that has an associated app that forms a protocol for both our members and other participants to get involved and sort of share the responsibility of actually voting. And so the idea is that this sort of platform will facilitate people having being able to have a say in the areas that they have a particular interest in. So it's both a political party and a technology platform sort of married together to hopefully, or to really facilitate a more involved population with their democracy.
So gentlemen, are you Australia's first IT political party startup?
So unfortunately not. There's a party called Senator On, or rather it's called Online Direct Democracy now, previously called Senator Online, and they've contested elections since 2007. Mm-hmm. They've never really done particularly well, but they've been around for a while, and their platform their idea is a little similar to ours. Ours we think goes a lot further, mm-hmm. But their platform is to build a direct democracy backend and then do the same thing with using members of parliament as sort of a gateway or a proxy for their members to be able to vote directly.
In the same way that we're using that same model, we'll use that as the senator as a gateway for the membership. The big difference though being that every single member is going to be responsible for every single bill, every single vote that happens is the responsibility of every single participant. The big difference in Flux, and there are several, but one of them is that you don't need to represent yourself, you can have someone represent you on your behalf whom you trust to represent you.
So that might be like an organisation like GetUp, or it might be another political party or any other sort of option like that. We're really open to...
Could be a person, could be your best friend, you know, could be anyone. The idea being that it's going to foster specialisation. You're going to have people who really care about their fields making decisions on legislation with the support of people who know that they're experts. You know, it's like...
Right.
If you got sick, you know what I mean, you would go to a doctor, right? In the same way that if there was legislation on industrial reform, I'm not an expert in that field, I would never purport to be, so why would I trust myself with that decision when I know there's probably someone I can find who aligns with me ideologically and who I know can make that decision well on my behalf?
But aren't these expert groups already organised? Aren't they already working with our elected officials?
Well, ideally, but realistically, if you look at the policy that comes out, the actual involvement, maybe it's quite involved at the beginning, but then once it gets watered down through the political process, we end up with pretty bad policy at the end of the day. There's also a lot of organisations that purport to be built of experts that are actually, you know, essentially a front for an industry body. And so there's a lot of stuff in the way between those sort of organisations and actual policy, and we want to vastly reduce that distance.
So how do you propose on doing that?
So the plan essentially is to use the existing framework of election, federal election, to essentially supplant ourselves into the Senate. So by running an election campaign, getting elected, our goal is to get 6 senators elected. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, we'll essentially create a block in the Senate of how would you describe it? We previously called the neutral voting block, the idea being that that block of senators is comprised of a number of different actors, all of whom use the system to their own advantage?
It's sort of a little bit like a sharing arrangement between senators, as in the organizations and the people who participate get most of the say a little bit of the time, as opposed to having a little bit of say all the time, which is sort of like our current system. And so we want to be able to partner with these sort of organizations to facilitate our members and people who want to use this system to come on board and then be able to support the organizations they want to support. And then those organizations can, between themselves, reorganize to focus on the issues that they really care about. And when they vote on particular ways or propose legislation, that will then pass through to the Flux senators, who will then either vote respectively or put forward that legislation and actually sponsor it to go before Parliament.
Okay, so let's walk through this step by step. So first of all, obviously people need to vote for Flux.
Yes. Yep.
It is now an official Australian party.
Not until the end of April.
So end of April?
We've
okay,
submitted
so
our registration papers, right. But it's a 3-month approval time, and
okay.
There's various stages to that.
So hopefully soon we'll
hopefully
be an
soon,
official
yep.
Australian party. So when the next election happens, if you get the votes in, and effectively those 6 seats, which I think are probably those contentious seats that you're looking for, is that correct?
Yep. Yes.
Then what happens? Do people go on the site? Is it like a list of policies? Like what does it look like?
So the app itself is probably going to be pretty simple. For most people, there'll be a registration phase where we have to validate their details against the electoral roll, and that's just to make sure that, you know, people aren't signing up twice and that sort of thing. They'll then be presented with options, and we're going to strongly try and encourage people not to put too much effort into this, as in it's more effective if they support an organisation or decide to save their votes over time than if they were to, like a direct democracy, vote on everything all the time. And so they'll be presented with either something like a list of various organisations or various options that they can choose. So if we say that they support an organisation, then they press that organisation and it says, okay, you're, you know, now delegating to this organisation. And then, sweet, there's like a green arrow, and that's basically it.
And that's giving a vote away?
Yes. So in this sort of sense, what would happen is that when they receive votes, we've got, so there's, for every issue that comes before Parliament, vote tokens are issued for that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have something sort of analogous to basic income, which we're probably maybe calling political points. And this would be an underlying sort of currency sort of thing that doesn't expire, unlike the vote tokens, which are of course tied to an issue, that people can swap the vote tokens for. So the idea is that all of the vote tokens for all the issues are swapped for this underlying sort of point, and then they can either keep those points or then give them to either the party or the organisation or the individual that they'd want to support.
Mm-hmm.
That would be sort of a regular ongoing thing. So as new issues come up, they would essentially their phone or we on their behalf would be doing that conversion and then transferring those points or those tokens to the representative or the respective party, the respective organisation.
So what stops organisation from paying people to vote their way?
So there's a couple of things. So in the short term, this would be exceptionally difficult for someone to do without being exceptionally obvious. And that's one of the beauties of the Flux system, is that because you're now engaging everybody, to have a meaningful impact, you would have to do one of two things. You'd have to either approach everybody to get that significant impact, by which point you would have revealed what you're doing and lose credibility, or you'd have to, I guess, use financial incentive for a small group of people who have amassed a lot of votes. Now, the cool thing about Flux is that there's no time limit, or there's no time frame for which you can or can't remove your vote from someone else. So if I give you my vote and I notice that you start doing things that aren't in accordance or alignment with what I would like to see you do, or the decisions I would like to see you make, I can remove my vote from you at any time.
Right.
In addition to that, people who are using this system, the idea is, the analogy that I've been using is something like evolution, right? Bad leaders will get created in the same way that bad genes get created by mutation. It happens. Not every idea that gets put forward is going to be good. Not every person who becomes a leader or expert, so to speak, in this system is going to be good. But Flux is a system whose mechanics is designed to correct that. So when you do see bad leaders and you do see bad policy occurring, Flux is a very powerful mechanism to quickly change that. Unlike our current mechanism, which is wait for an election in 3 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the other side of it is, as well, is because it's software, we can make it against the terms of use to essentially I guess, take money for votes. So that would mean that we could take legal action for people who are taking money for votes using the software.
Okay, so, I mean, this podcast is called The Agile Revolution, so for the listeners, people listening, maybe I should bring it back to some of that. So yeah, is this platform actually built? So when the party's up and running, is all the underlying app there?
We've produced a minimum viable product for an early model back in May.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found that that wasn't going to get us any members. So we had to focus more on the organization and on getting members and things like that. So we're probably not going to focus on actually building the app until we've been elected. There's about a year's time or six to 12 months time between actually getting elected and taking office. So that gives us a very significant period to build and develop this and test it very thoroughly before going in. So no, it's not built. We are looking into it currently, into building sort of a bit of a scaffold app to help begin to engage people and to get it on their phones, and so we can do things like push notifications. But the app itself, we're going to hold off committing resources to that until we've actually got to the point where we're elected, where we're certain that it's going to be used.
So you are a startup. I'm assuming that you know lean startup sort of principles around, you mentioned minimal viable product.
Yep.
So what are some of the key hypotheses that you're looking to try and test very early on?
So I guess the way that we haven't actually done much in sort of, like, while we've been involved in those sort of things in the past, we have a bit of an idea of how to run, and we are running it a little bit like that in terms of trying to stay, like, we've had a lot of problem with, you know, bringing on people and having diminishing returns of doing that too fast. But at the moment, we've basically been trying to validate our ideas with the way that we sell it. So, like, using different landing pages is one tactic, and we've sort of settled on things that people respond to, and we're sort of testing different ways of engaging with the other minor parties. But we haven't been doing this by the book as such. So, so in terms of, you know, which hypotheses, we've been
a bit
looser than that in our approach so far.
And you are an organisation, so you're non-profit, right?
Well, the political party is, I mean, it's a political party, so we don't actually have to register as an organisation. We can just be an amorphous collection of people.
Yeah.
We haven't actually figured all that sort of stuff out yet.
Yeah.
We've still got to, figure out what type of corporation we're going to do and how we're actually going to manage the party finances and stuff like that.
But realistically, if this does take off, and there's been a lot of media coverage in the last few weeks for you guys, the scalability is going to be an obvious issue, isn't it? Millions of people in Australia.
This is
push notifications. I mean, we're talking about serious infrastructure here.
Yeah. This is one of the reasons that we're trying to encourage people not to vote directly, is that's actually a scalability concern as well, because it's much easier concentrating things into a few actors than having, you know, tens of millions of actors every day. So we are in that sort of thing. I've had a bit of experience with backends as a service, and so that's probably how we'll develop this to begin with. I know they've got a lot of infrastructure around the idea of push notifications and things like that. But the actual, while the app, once we start, you know, allowing people to vote on it and things like that, that will require a lot more infrastructure. The short term is basically a membership database, and so even with 10 million people in that, that's still a reasonably light database. We could run that on one server. So, we're concerned with that in the point of view that where our architecture we know is going to be compatible with that, but we haven't actually given much concern to the real technical requirements yet. That's sort of a we'll deal with as it comes problem.
Look at some of the security requirements. I would imagine with votes potentially being bought. You hear about in California where they're doing significant experimentation in the deliberative democracy area, that you've got companies that are buying votes effectively. Is that something that you think is going to be a concern?
So, to answer the security concerns first, we're going to leverage a lot of the hardware that's been built recently for Bitcoin. So there's been a lot of research over the past few years, particularly into hardware wallets and multi-signature authentication and things like that. So we're going to rely on those sort of devices becoming cheaper and cheaper and cheaper to being able to be essentially mass distributed. So, for example, a YubiKey is one of those things that might be the right sort of price point and the right sort of technical capability to be able to support something like this. One of the things we've found is that a lot of a lot of interest has been we've got from people, say, over 55, so not, you know, tech natives, and we're looking into, for example, Nathan and I both have, you know, wearables, these watches here, looking into things like this as people would keep their identities on things like this, secure devices that they can, you know, making it something you have rather than something you know, in order to protect people, especially when they can use, say, a public computer, but then sign it on a private device, so that, you know, malware can't, you know, steal cryptographic keys and things like that. So, we're essentially relying on the Bitcoin community and the community forming around cryptocurrency to leverage their security innovations into what we're doing. Luckily, we won't have to, like, the earliest that we take office is middle of 2017, so there's still a fair amount of time to engage with that sort of issue in more detail. And then, what was the second part of that question?
So I guess around how there's been a lot of vote buying behaviour inside California.
Yeah, so I mean, this is a difficult question at the end of the day, because if two people go into a room and agree on things and we can't monitor it, then there's no way that we can possibly get around that. The way that we're tackling this is there's sort of like a multi-staged approach, which ends in a legal sort of thing. But the way that Flux is constructed, it's constructed with various philosophies around the way knowledge works. And so what we want to do is create a marketplace that takes advantage of competition when it exists. And so, for example, if a company wanted to have a say on one particular issue, so an issue comes before Parliament, say a developer has, you know, wants to get it passed for various reasons, but then there's also a block of people who don't want it passed because they acknowledge that it would be bad policy. So the first defense we have for that sort of thing is that we take advantage of supply and demand. And so when there is low demand for an issue, because of course we're trying to convince most people to trade away the votes they don't care about, so there's a large supply of these votes that's spread out over the length of the issue, the company would have to, provided that they could acquire the political points to do so, they would then have to acquire a whole lot of political points and then spend those to try and acquire these votes. Now, if there's no demand, then they'd be very cheap. But as soon as someone else steps in, they can start buying to simply push up the price. And if they can push up the price of those of that trade, then that means that the corrupt body in this case has to spend more and more and more in order to acquire them. So because we start from an even distribution across the population, we make it very hard for special interests to come in and try and manipulate the vote in that way. So that's the first level where this market-based system provides a natural defense against the case where two parties disagree on what policy should be, and it makes it expensive for those parties to fight.
Just to add there, I mean, if it's good policy, then there won't be any fight, right? If what someone's proposing is great policy, you'll have no problem getting that through. Whereas if what you're proposing is bad policy, controversial policy that's not well thought out enough, then you'll have difficulty getting that through.
Yeah. So the second way that Flux defends against this is that we don't try and get the right policy through the first time. Rather, we focus on our ability to correct the mistakes of previous policy, which either means undoing them or amending them or that sort of thing. And so if a special interest were to get through past that first hurdle and spend a lot of their resources in order to push through bad policy, then immediately other groups can create an issue to undo that. And then, you know, unless there's more resources there to continue this fight, then that special interest has no defense. And so in this way, we hope to essentially make it so hard to maintain bad policy that it takes the entire, even if there were, say, 50,000 Australians who were just pouring their votes into this, to make it so difficult to maintain that they wouldn't be able to do anything else. And so it sort of locks them up in this way because they're trying to maintain something that's not in the common interest as such. And so by focusing on correcting mistakes, we make it harder in that second layer as well. The third layer of defense against this sort of thing is, as Nathan mentioned before, is that to do something like this is difficult to do quietly, and that if we can emphasize legal control over the way that people are able to use the platform, then we can essentially, you know, bring on the banhammer when someone tries to do something like this in a public way.
But we can already tell where political donations are going to certain parliamentarians right now. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
So we already know that players are doing this.
Yeah, so it's our expectation that Flux is going to be an order of magnitude or two more expensive to do this sort of thing. I mean, at the moment, you look at, you know, the list of political donations and things are in, you know, the $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000. We'd much rather it be far, far more expensive for someone to try and launch this sort of attack, because when it becomes, you know, the more expensive it becomes, the less economically viable it becomes, and thus, you know, the better system we end up with.
And sorry, go on.
Oh, that was, yeah.
Just to add to that as well, I mean, you know, we know where political donations come from. There is a register of that, and we can see that, but what we don't know is where donations that we don't know about come from. So, you know, we only know what we know, but
I mean, recognise as opposed to under the covers?
That's exactly what I mean, right? So, and that happens. You know, I think we would be, you know, I think it would be naive of us to say that it doesn't
happen. I mean, there was,
you only have to look at...
Last year, there was, what, 10 state members around Newcastle that, you know, all had to resign because of both of Liberal and Labour for, you know, essentially taking brown envelopes with money.
I have a friend who was... of time involved in that scene, and some of the stories he told me of, you know, the things that happened in that. So, you know, we know that this happens, right? So the thing with Flux is that it's going to make it much more difficult for that kind of behaviour to be conducted. It's going to make it much more challenging for people to conduct that kind of political manoeuvre in a clandestine way, because suddenly you have so many actors, right? You have every citizen theoretically could be an actor in this, so you have to get a lot more people on
site. I'm going to hopefully go to the obvious point. What stops someone from giving you guys money?
That's a question we haven't had.
How are you being audited?
So, I guess there are a lot of requirements around when you're a political party about what sort of donations you take and things like that. So we're required to, on July 1st every year, submit a, you know, a list of all our donations and all our finances and things like that. So there's a lot of, you know, pre-existing conditions like that. I guess in terms of, if we wanted to get more existential about this and talk about the idea of someone like trying to, you know, bribe us to, once we get in there.
Usually a third party comes in to do a separate audit to ensure that there is no internal machinations.
And that's something that we would, you know, like, absolutely consider and be open to. I think it's probably something that in time as Flux grows we will be doing.
Yeah.
But I think the obvious answer for us probably is that the system is designed so that we can't... I mean, the moment the system did anything other than...
It's an open database, right?
So it's an open database that's attached to the blockchain, which means that it's all publicly verifiable. Anything that we do to change it would be public. We wouldn't be able to change anything without every single person...
Knowing immediately
what we had done. There would be no clandestine way for us to make any change without everyone involved immediately knowing. That's the power of it. So yeah, you know, maybe that's something that we could do.
I'm just thinking of the whole office space, one scene, sort of... behind the scenes.
I suppose it would be possible we would undermine everything that we had
worked for
this is a project that we're extremely passionate about, not just because it's where we are right now, but our whole lives have kind of, I think, both of us led to this point. So you know, it would make sense we would lose all credibility.
All right, pinky promise.
We won't take bribes. But
So for the guys listening, probably they haven't heard of these things called deliberative democracy, direct democracy. What the hell are they?
So I don't actually know a whole lot about deliberative democracy. I know about, you know, direct democracy and liquid democracy and like citizen juries and things like that. But I guess, you know, ultimately, like, their ways of... Well, actually, here's what I really think of it. Their answers to the question, who should rule? And their ways of that people have attempted to come up with essentially an algorithm to derive the right answer from a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we aren't using them. Ultimately, is that we feel like one of the fundamental flaws with the previous ways of doing or partaking in and setting up democratic systems is that they start from sort of an idealistic point about taking in everyone's opinion from society and those sort of ways of thinking. And we come about it from a different way, and that is that there's always going to be a best policy given a certain situation. Given two policies, one of them will agree more with the universe and one of them will agree less. And that's because every policy has behind it an explanation that is used to construct the amendments or the behavioral changes or whatever else is being proposed. And so what we set out to do more is to try and construct a system to find policy that's just more compatible with the universe and that with the, you know, the laws of nature and the emergent laws of nature that, you know, govern the
way
people interact.
It's more realistic due to the complexity of the world that we live in.
That's exactly right. And I think direct democracy assumes that every single citizen has the capacity to be an expert on every single issue.
And the time.
And the time. And, you know, I think that's quite naive whilst idealistically awesome. You know, we're doing this because we believe in empowerment. We believe that people deserve more control over their government and the decisions that are passed. But I think where we differ with that ideology or that perspective is that we don't assume that everyone has the capacity to make these decisions. You know, everyone doesn't. And I think most people would agree to that too. I think people want more power and they want to be empowered to have more of a say in their government. But I don't think if you said to them, hey, do you feel capable to, you know, vote on every single issue that goes before your government and know what you're talking about and make a decision, I would say there'd be very few people in our society who would, you know, hand on heart say, yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah.
So I think that Flux addresses that excellently because it says, you know, we believe in democracy, right? We believe that people have the capacity to choose, but what we're also saying is you have the capacity to choose
what you care about.
What you care about, yeah. And someone who you care about to represent you. Not someone who's been put in front of you on a piece of paper, but anyone who's willing to say, hey, I'm going to have a go at this. We're in the age of social media. You know what I mean? How many people on Twitter, on Facebook are social figures to some degree, are experts in their field, have the backing of a bunch of people, have no interest in getting into politics formally, probably because they're not, you know, I don't know, liars, cheats, or power hungry, right? But know what they're talking about. And given the right platform, would become politicians in that sense because people believe in what they say and because they know what they're talking about. So that's what Flux is. It's empowering people that otherwise wouldn't get into politics because that's not what they're about, but because they are experts, it's giving them that voice. And that's gonna, we believe that's gonna really be a better policy than having someone who's a generalist, you know, take on a portfolio in government and be, you know, this person who's moved from one portfolio to the next, has no real technical expertise in the field that they're the minister of, making the decisions, right? It doesn't make sense from our perspective. So give that power to experts and we'll see better policy.
Experts don't always agree, though.
That's true.
There are plenty of experts that have nothing smart to say. And so this goes back to the idea of fundamental explanations and the way that they interact with reality. In a lot of ways, we're sort of basing Flux around the same mechanics that help science work. So science isn't about, it's not about which theories are right, it's more about which theories are wrong. And that the theories that we use are the ones that haven't been cut down yet. And so we're gearing it more in that sort of fallibilist sense than other sort of traditional democracies. So when we talk about experts being empowered or specialists or community groups or things like that, we're relying on the power of self-organization, essentially, to end up with a way that people can trial ideas, not necessarily first, but that when they become trialed, they either turn out to be good or bad, and we can find out more because of their trial, as opposed to like arguing about things for, you know, ad infinitum beforehand. And so this is, I think, one of the ways, like if we go back to the science example, there are plenty of scientists who disagree about, you know, theories on the edge of science that are actively being researched. But once we come up with, you know, multiple theories to explain a phenomena and can do an experiment about that, it's not a matter of whether you believe one to be right or wrong, which I think is mostly where experts disagree, but it's a matter of, you know, which one works, which one doesn't work. And so that's what we're more trying to focus on, is getting people in a position to test ideas rather than focusing on trying to get some sort of consensus before it happens.
And so, which is really the lean startup paradigm, right? So get something out there.
Yes, yeah. Test it, validate it.
Yes.
Yeah, if it doesn't work, pivot. And that's what
we're... eventually I could get back to the podcast.
Yeah. Getting back to the matter at hand.
I think I forgot the point. I think I was going to say... to the same point about the policy and the policy surviving, you know what I mean, and that good policy continuing, it's the same with leaders or people that become those experts, so to speak, right? People will come into the system and be, you know, purport to be something, have a whole bunch of ideas that don't work out, and the system won't allow them to continue going, right? But the people that are good leaders and provide good policy and good conjecture will continue. And on conjecture, the more actors you have in the system, the more different groups that become a part of it, I guess the diversity of criticism and debate that you're going to get. Right now we have two ideologies in Parliament, and the Greens to supplant them with some other minor fringe groups. This is going to open this up to so many more different ideas, and I think it's that diversity of the debate that's going to engage more people, it's going to deliver better policy, right, than the two-party dichotomy.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mention lean in that way. One of the things that sort of inspired this was, and this has been an idea that I've, you know, known about for a while, but then is very compatible with this sort of stuff, where people don't build, like, Is it water twining or whatever it is, that thing where you get the sticks and you try and find water?
Divining.
So, for example, no one has ever successfully built a business around water divining. And this idea of responding to an economy or responding to things that are able to exist in reality and stay in reality once they're instantiated, I feel like that's the real power behind why, you know, economics produces better and better products over time. And the same with, you know, if you're, you know, developing a product as a startup, what you're looking for is, we've got this idea and how do we change this in such a way to make sure that it remains when we instantiate it in reality? And that, I feel like, is the same sort of thing that we're trying to tap into, but in terms of policy. And I feel like that's the key behind making this sort of thing work, is figuring out that core mechanic that helps, you know, the startups that once they work, they just go explosive, and trying to figure out how can we use that same sort of, you know, property of, I guess, people coming together and of, you know, an economy or an ecosystem. How can we use that property in an ecosystem and then apply that to Parliament? Because at the moment, you know, we it doesn't look anything like that at all.
Yeah. So I know that you certainly don't plan on creating new policy. That's not the intent. The intent is to work on...
At least not for us.
Yep. Yeah, facilitating others to create policy, to test their policy and put it forward.
So a question that a friend of mine had was, how do you determine who's the representative at the end of the day?
As in the candidates themselves?
So
this is the one part where we don't have a great solution. We intend for people to be able to vote on them, but while we're still small, that introduces a lot of risk, particularly if one of the major parties decided to try and stack our membership, then they might be able to, you know, take over the elections for candidates. So we can't do that at this stage. At this stage, what we're doing is, we're inviting people to apply if they're interested, but we're essentially looking for people who believe that the system of Flux is better able to make decisions than their personal opinions. And so we're looking for a very sort of special philosophical alignment in people who would make them good candidates in this case. And we're basically hand-vetting people for this first batch of six. And then if we go beyond this, then hopefully we'll have, I guess, a more generalized process so that we can, you know, scale, because you can't make this sort of thing happen worldwide if we have to hand vet every candidate. That just wouldn't be practical.
So
we don't have a great answer for that question yet.
Yep.
It's basically, what we perceive to be the best quality candidates out of the people who express interest.
So seeking a selfless, highly motivated, sort of person who has high ethics.
I wouldn't say it's selfless, in the sense that, you know, there is some self-interest in the sense, like, what we're doing, you know, we have an interest in this, and that means that we have to sacrifice perhaps our ideology. You know, if we win a seat in the Senate, there are going to be times where we'll have to say, I'm letting this go, but it's more because our belief in this system is greater than our own. And also because we recognise when bad policy gets passed, like Max was saying earlier, there's a mechanism to correct that. So the bad policy will happen. Essentially, it's someone who's prepared to see that bigger picture. It's not so much about being selfless, but it's recognition of the bigger picture.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you touched on this idea of, like, high ethics as well. I've had, you know, a number of sort of, like, ethical scaffolds of my life, and none of them were appropriate besides the current one. And so even though I considered myself to always be a very ethical person, I often had a framework of ethics that wouldn't be a good fit. And so that's more what we're looking for, is not necessarily someone who's selfless or someone who considers themselves a very ethical person, but someone who has the right framework of ethics, and particularly is very mission-driven in terms of getting real reform out there to make decisions better in Parliament. And that's sort of what we're more concerned with, is someone who wants better decisions to be made as opposed to wants their decisions to be made.
And so it's the things they value.
Yes.
Yeah, particularly, I mean, I guess one of the things they have to value, though, is that their opinion is not better than everyone else's opinion, and that there are decision-making mechanisms out there that are better than their opinions because they're just one person. So, I mean, the only time that we take sort of any sort of superior angle with this sort of stuff is in the creation and maintenance of Flux itself. Is everything else where we have to say all of my opinions about everything else are not as good as what this system can produce, and that this system is the highest sort of, as far as we can tell, is the most important thing, and maintaining the integrity of this system is far more important than our other opinions.
So I guess if there was a bill that said, you know, we're going to make an amendment to the Constitution that says that Flux can't exist, well, in that instance, we would be compelled to then vote against that.
I mean, it's the sort of thing where, because we're sort of set up as a fallibilist organization, if our membership, like, you know, at the end of the day, if there was a bill to make Flux illegal and it had unanimous support, then at that point, or if Flux, you know, decided that it shouldn't exist anymore, then that's okay. I mean, it's a weird thing to think about. But especially if we've just gone on about how it's a great decision-making mechanism, but then one of its decisions is that it shouldn't exist. Then evidently, well, you know,
yeah.
There's, yeah, so we've got, we're sort of going there, isn't it?
That's what I mean by selfless. It's taking your own needs out of the equation and letting the collective as a whole choose that path.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. Selfless insofar as, yeah, not holding on to your own opinions very dearly. That's definitely, definitely one of the traits we're looking for.
So would you be a representative yourself?
Yeah, we'll both be running.
Yeah, we'll both be running. So we're looking for four more, particularly. We're also looking for other people, which I, like, at one point have been calling, like, vanity candidates, in the sense of running in places that we could never win, but in order to, you know, either build more press or things like that. So, for example, it would be great to run some candidates or run a candidate against Bronwyn Bishop, for example. Just so that we're, you know, on the ballot paper and we can steer some votes away from her. That would be, you know, one of those things that we...
Surely there's lots of people out there that don't want to vote for Bronwyn Bishop.
Well, yeah, that's precisely. So, but that might bring us a bit of press. And so, you know, we do things like that as well. So there are candidates that can seriously be elected, and then there are candidates we need for other reasons. So,
right. And so, you know, our current Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, recently talked about us being an agile country. What were your thoughts on... Because he just keeps going on about it, and innovation and disruption, and it's just buzzwords.
Well, here it is, you know,
buzzwords central.
If he was a true believer, he'd pick up Flux today. So, you know.
Awesome.
We'll see how he goes with the next election, eh?
So you've got 958?
I think as of today. Today? It might even be, I'll just bring up the count now. Because we had some press over the weekend, and it's just been fantastic. We've got like 100 new members, so which I think it was like our best day ever, or second best. So
if you're able to vote inside of Australia, where do people need to go?
So if people are interested in getting registered, so we've actually had five more members since then. We're at 963 at the moment, so which is great. So our website is voteflux.org. There's a membership form down, sort of about halfway down the page, but there's a big ugly button at the front that you can click, and that'll take you straight there. Basically, we need some details to validate you against the AEC role, and then you're counted as a member.
And if they want to ask you any questions, how do they go about that?
Our emails are both on the webpage, and we respond as quickly as we can. So in addition to that, we've got our Twitter and Facebook pages. We're active on that.
And
as
how
well.
Can people contact you on Twitter?
So @VoteFlux is our Twitter handle. Our Facebook page is /voteflux.org. Our emails are both like max.k@voteflux.org and nathan.spataro@voteflux.org. We've actually also got an open Slack channel if people are interested in some more technical conversation or anything like that.
Awesome. So for both of you, thank you for joining me on the podcast. I hope you had fun.
Yes.
And best of luck for the future.
Yeah, thank you.
So
thanks for having us.